Yeah, okay. So first of all, thanks a lot for the invitation. It's really a pleasure to be here. So this is joint work with my colleague in Memphis, Mate Virdel, and Emmanuel Lezin. So some of the parts with Virdel, some others with Virdel and Lezin. So what I will talk about are refinements of Semeredi's theorem that actually have to do with Hardy sequences, so same setup. And actually the methods we use have a lot to do with equidistribution results on nil manifolds. And at the end, if I have time, I will also mention a conjecture that actually relates refinements for general sequences with equidistribution results on nil manifolds, not only Hardy sequences. Okay, so there will be some kind of overlap with Mate's talk, but even the statements are a little bit different, and the technique is completely different. So a very general problem we're interested in is the following. So you have a subset of the integers with positive density, and you like to know what kind of patterns you can find within every such subset. Okay, so and actually immediately, this is very general, we're going to restrict to shift invariant patterns. Okay, so for example, arithmetic progressions is a good example to keep in mind. So we're actually equally happy to find a specific pattern as we are to find any shift of this. And actually, it will be pretty impossible. I mean, so there are two reasons to deal with this problem. So first of all, pretty much all the examples that we know that you can find within every subset of positive density are shift invariant patterns. There are a few conjecture examples that we don't know how to deal with that are not shift invariant. And second is that this gives us a lot more flexibility. We have more tools to use. So in particular, we can use ergodic theory. And this is a good thing, especially if you are an ergodic theorist, as I am. But even if you are not, really, it's just very convenient setup. Okay, so there are no approximate identities become identities. There are no truncation issues. So for some problems, this is really very essential. So to reformulate this problem for shift invariant patterns, so what we're really interested in, so you are given k sequences of with integer values. And so you like to decide whether these k sequences are good in the sense that for every subset of the integers with positive density, we can find patterns of the form m plus a1n up to m plus akn. So this is a general setup. This is still very general. So we don't expect to find necessary and sufficient conditions to answer this question. Just criteria that allow us, first of all, to disqualify immediately some examples and make good guesses. And then, hopefully, we'll have methods to verify the guesses. Okay? Okay, so, of course, just to be very, very clear, so we're interested to find, so this is the set of eligible patterns. So for every subset of the integer with positive density, we would like to show that there exists an M and there exists an N. This is like saying there exists an arithmetic progression. Of course, we don't expect to find all of them. For whatever I will say, it will be also true that for many n and many m's, this is also the case. But forget about it. Exhibiting a single m and n is as hard pretty much as figuring out that you have several. So some examples. So the most well-known example is Semeredi's theorem, of course. So you have arbitrary long arithmetic progressions. This corresponds to the case where you have linear sequences. Another very nice example is the result of Bergelson and Leibmann, that actually whenever you have k polynomials with zero constant term, then this is all of them give an eligible pattern. So whenever you have a subset with positive density, you can always find stuff like that. So in particular, for example, you can find arithmetic progressions with a step, a square, a third power, anything you would like, or a shift of a geometric progression pattern or like that. Okay. Now, the proof of the second result uses ergodic theory from the very from the starting point, and it really relies heavily on machinery that was developed by Fersenberg in 77 in order to give a second proof of Semmelweis theorem. Okay, but it needs two extra smart tricks. But modulo these tricks, the proof is essentially the same. Okay. Of course, this is that was it took several years to get established. These tricks required a lot of thought, but the general structure of the proof at least looks the same. Okay. So this scenario Fersenberg is rather flexible actually when you deal with problems like that. So you do you can isolate some pieces that if you know if you can do this small part and the whole machinery carries through, and you can solve your problem. So this is of course an advantage. And so, okay, so for my talk, actually, I will not deal with patterns like that in general. So I will just assume that all these sequences are multiples of a single sequence. So basically, I will just deal with arithmetic progressions. Okay, so there are two reasons for that. First of all, you do get a nice, interesting results, but the statements are much simpler. So I only have to give you conditions for a single sequence, instead of giving you conditions for all the sequences and differences of them or linear combos of them. So simpler statements, and also the techniques that we actually are going to develop very likely will help to deal with problems of this form in general. Okay, this is certainly the case with the polynomial Semmelweis theorem. So it's really not easier at all to deal with this case than to deal with the general case, okay, the arithmetic progression case. Yeah, by the way, up to now, as far as I know, the only proof that has been written down for this result, even for the squares, is the ergodic one. This will very likely change, but nevertheless, I think there is a definite advantage for this kind of qualitative problems to work in the ergodic world. Things are just simpler. So this is actually the problem we're interested in. So we have a sequence AN with integer values, and we like to decide whether it's, let's call it good for Semmelweis theorem, or just a good, or I don't know, Semmelweis sequence, whatever. So whether every subset of the integer with positive density contains arithmetic progressions with common difference of the form AN. Okay, and we would like to have this for every case, so arbitrarily long arithmetic progressions. So some examples, as we said before, AN is equal to N corresponds to the theorem of Semmelweis. So everything else we talk about is going to be a refinement of Semmelweis theorem. So the squares work, that's the polynomial Semmelweis theorem. N square minus 1 works, this is trivial, although it doesn't have zero constant term, because you can just shift N by 1, and you are going to get a polynomial with zero constant term. But I'm more interested in things that do not work. So the odd numbers do not work for trivial reasons. So of course, if you consider lambda to be the set of even numbers, the difference of any two even numbers is an even number, so it cannot contain things of the form n plus 1. Same reason, n squared plus 1 is not a good sequence. So, the first obvious obstruction, the first thing to check always is that the range of your sequence contains multiples of every positive integer. So at least that much should be satisfied. Okay, so polynomials with zero constant term definitely satisfy that. And actually any polynomial that satisfies this condition is going to be good for Semmelweis theorem, but this is actually strangely much harder to prove than for the polynomials of zero constant term. I will explain in a bit why. And unfortunately, of course, this is not the only obstruction. So n factorial is a sequence that contains multiples of every positive integer, but this is bad. For another rather silly but less obvious reason, this sequence is lacunary. So it increases very fast, but in the sense that an plus 1 over an is, let's say, greater or equal than 2. Okay, this is a problem because whenever you have a lacunary sequence, it's not hard to show that you can find an irrational number so that all these multiples stay away from integers. And this is very easy. So having this in mind, it's very easy to construct, to see why this is bad news. This sequence cannot be good for Semmelweis theorem. So if you take, for example, lambda to be equal to this set for epsilon small enough, You cannot find two elements in this. This is a set, of course, with positive density. You cannot find two elements that belong, that satisfy this inequality, and their difference is of the form an, because this guy stays away from the zero. Okay. But actually, as a guiding principle, as a rule of thumb, you could say if you make sure that you don't have divisibility problems, one thing to make sure, and second thing to make sure is that you don't have problems like that. So at least for every irrational number, things come back to zero, arbitrarily close to zero. Then if you have a reasonable sequence defined by a closed formula and it satisfies it, so it has very good chances to be good for Semeredi. I mean, this is false in general. But for the way you construct counterexamples is always not an explicit closed form. Okay, so this is a very good rule of thumb. So if you see that this thing holds, then you don't have this. These two obvious restrictions are not a problem. Then very likely you are in good shape. Okay, for all the examples, actually, I will mention this is the case. Of course, how you prove it, that's a different issue. So this is how you make guesses. So, for example, the first thing we tried to deal with, actually, and was this very simple sequence. So integer part n to the square root of 2. So this is not polynomial, but it looks close to a polynomial. So one might think, especially if you have some experience in this area, so this should not be a very hard problem to deal with. You would think I will use the first order machinery, so this is kind of polynomial, it should go through, but actually, at least for us, it was very hard. So, there is a reason why this is not easy, and I will explain them. Nevertheless, so we recently proved with Mate that for every alpha, for every real number, all the fractional powers produce good sequence for Semeredi. So every subset of the integer with positive density contain arbitrarily long APs with common difference integer part n to the A. And just one word, why this is not so easy. So when one tries to use this machinery of Furstenberg to give a proof for this, there are normally two parts. One is verify the result for random systems, whatever that is, let's say random sets, weak mixing sets, and this is no problem, it goes through. And then you have to deal with the structured systems, the what we call the distal systems. And then there is a method there, but this method depends on you being able to prove the caloristic version of this result first by some other method. Okay, so you have to do this by hand. For example, for Semeredi's theorem, the proof of Furstenberg goes through if you know how to prove van der Waarde, which is okay, it's easy enough. But in this case, we really have these methods for proving caloristic results are really not flexible at all. So you can verify this, let's say, prove them for polynomials with zero constant term, but for polynomials with non-zero constant term that do not have good divisibility properties, the proof just doesn't work. For some reason, it fails. That's the same problem with this thing. At least we do not see any way to prove the caloristic result by hand or doing any topological dynamics or anything. So this is the problem. So you completely abandon the traditional techniques and try to do something else, something that is actually a little bit more sophisticated. And I will explain in a moment why. But first of all, of course, as with Mate, that was our initial objective, but in the course now of proving this, actually our method gives us something much stronger. So other examples, that, for example, if you consider the setup of these logarithmic or exponential functions of Hardy, Mate explained what this is, addition, multiplication, composition, you use constants, exponential logarithms, finitely many times. So I think Mate produced an even stranger example. So this is what I came up with. So things like that belong there. And you can even take a more abstract setup just to cover more exotic functions if that pleases you for some reason. So you could formulate a stronger result, which I think maybe it's the next one. Anyway, in this setup, logarithmic exponential functions, this is good enough, generally enough. So I need some notation. So we say that a function a grows slower than b if a over b goes to zero. Okay. So x log x slower than x squared, but faster than x. But x squared plus log x does not grow faster than x squared. Okay, so but for this. So in any case, so this is a result that we were able to get, not the definite one, but one that covers all the examples we were interested in, and more, like the examples I mentioned before. So whenever you have a logarithmic exponential function that is, so first of all, the first thing you assume for these guys is that always they have at most polynomial growth. Okay, so we do assume this. So, and actually that the a of x is actually grows faster than x to the d and slower than x to the d plus 1 for some integer d. Okay, so as long as you have this, the sequence that you take by taking integer parts is going to be good for some Semmeridis theorem. So it doesn't really matter how complicated your function is. Only this, if you impose these growth restrictions, is good enough. So, for example, of course, you cover all the fractional powers. Of course, the integer powers were covered by Bergson-Lehmann. This covers the non-integer powers and examples like that, in case you're interested in. Okay, and a slightly more general setup, Hardy field functions, Matt explained. I will not go through this again. So allows you to deal with more exotic functions that you would really never even try to deal with before okay, knowing this kind of result. So you could use the gamma function if you want, the Riemann zeta function, the okay, so the Li function. So all these functions are functions that belong to some Hardy field. So if you like to give a really exotic example, so these are some sequences that are good for Semmeridis theorem. Okay, the only point that I'm trying to make is that really it's the growth restrictions that we're going to put on these functions that matter, and the fact, you will see what is the crucial fact actually. So I will mention in a moment why this thing that we belong in a Hardy field is so useful, which property we use. Because it does really look, if you have no experience, as a very general setup. You may think if you can do this, why you don't cover any analytic function, for example. Okay. Let me just tell you some ideas in the proof, because I think the method of proof actually could be useful for other examples, not even for Hardy sequences. So the key observation, let's say integer part of n to the square root of 2 is not polynomial, so the next best thing would have been if it contains an infinite polynomial progression in the range, which is false. This is too much to ask in general. So for n, but the next best thing happens. So actually, the range of this sequence contains a lot of polynomial progressions. And this is not enough unless you have some control on this polynomial progression. I mean, the odd numbers contain a lot of polynomial progression in the range, but they are bad. So you need to have some control, let's say on the leading term or on something. So, for example, let's say for x to the square root of 2, if you look on the range of the sequence integer part n to the square root of 2, you can find arbitrarily long progressions that have this form. Okay, so, and the important thing here is that you have some control on the leading term. So you have, so for fixed m, I do have an arithmetic progression with length nm, and the important thing is that nm goes to infinity. And it is, again, very important that for every n, I do have something like that. Okay, so this is the kind of control that we like to have. So if the degree of the sequence is higher than 2, then you get polynomial progression similarly. So I would have to introduce more constant. But I would, again, have control on the leading term. This is the important thing. So I claim that now, after you reach this point, you forget everything about your sequence, and you're just going to deal with patterns of this form. So you will only use this information, that much. Okay? And let me briefly explain what is the crucial property of this Hardy field or logarithmic exponential functions that is really used. Of course, it's closed under differentiation. But the important thing is any logarithmic exponential function has actually finite many zeros. this looks this Zenino this actually for a logarithm exponential function is non-trivial. Okay, so but Hardy checked it 100 years ago in this book. So orders of infinity takes 3 pages. It's a rather clever argument. But this is actually combined with all the other information we have is a very powerful thing. So for the following reason. So if you have a function in LE, the derivative is in LE. So the derivative has finitely many zeros. If you have finitely many zeros, you are eventually positive or negative. So the function is eventually monotonic. So if you are eventually monotonic, your limit exists, maybe plus or minus infinity, but it does exist. So if you have the quotient of any functions, it's again a function LE. So the limit of the quotient of any two functions exists. And even better, the limit of the quotient of the derivatives of any two function exists. So now if you remember back from high school, if the limit of the quotient of the derivative exists, you can apply L'Hopital's rule. And this is very good because it allows you actually to differentiate inequalities. So this innocent thing allows us to differentiate inequalities. So I say that AX grows faster than X and slower than X squared, and I can immediately conclude that the derivative goes to infinity and grows slower than x. So this is the kind of thing that is crucial. So by just putting a restriction on the growth of a of x, this forces actually growth restrictions on the derivatives, in all the derivatives. And if you, as all of you know, if you have growth restrictions on the derivatives, you can easily estimate exponential sums using van der Kolk's method, for example. And this is useful when you try to find these patterns. Okay, so this is what we use. This is what is so useful with these guys. So with oscillating functions like x sine x, you really cannot differentiate inequality. So this is an extra good thing. Yeah, okay, so as we said, we translate the problem to ergodic theory. This is really the only method we have for dealing with such refinements of Semmered's theorem. I'm pretty sure this correspondence principle was mentioned in the past, Vitaly or Tammy. So very briefly, so our setup in ergodic theory is we have a measure preserving system, so a finite measure space and a transformation that preserves this measure. And the good thing, the good observation of Furstenberg that allows to translate problems about finding configurations in subsets of the integer with positive density to multiple recurrence problem in ergodic theory is that whenever you give me a subset of the integers, it is possible to construct a measure preserving system and a set with positive measures. So you have this estimate. This estimate tells you that if you prove something good in ergodic theory, you get something good in combinatorics. Okay? So the correspondence intuitively is X. As your space X, you could think of as the space of positive integers, sigma algebra of the subsets. As the measure is a density function, not exactly a measure, but anyways. So your set A is the set lambda, and the measure preserving transformation is the shift on the integer. X goes to X plus 1. This certainly preserves the density. Okay, the only problem is the density is not a measure, but this can be fixed, okay, and it gives you this. So now, having this correspondence principle, what is left to prove? So this is the equivalent statement in ergodic theory for degree 1 plus functions and for what we call double recurrence, so refinement, let's say, of Roth's theorem. So what we like to prove, you have a function that satisfies these growth restrictions, and for every measure preserving system, and set with positive measure, this multiple intersection is positive for some n. So if you're able to do this, you have the result in combinatorics. Okay. So let me tell you what is the substitute of the Furstenberg's method, what we use, and actually it has been used recently a couple of times to produce similar results. So one key which is actually our starting point, is a corollary, actually, of a result of Hosenkrein-Lehmann, a pretty recent but hard-to-prove result. So this tells you, in the case that AN is a polynomial sequence, so suppose AN is a polynomial sequence, then if you like to check multiple recurrence properties like this one, this result tells you that it suffices to check them for nil systems. So nil system is a particular class of system that has algebraic structure. So the whole point you have to remember is just so that it's definitely simpler to work than the general measure preserving system, but it's sophisticated enough so that you still have a pretty hard problem. Okay, so if you work with infinite polynomial sequences, this will be manageable. But if you don't have polynomial sequences, then this is, again, a scary problem. This is a hard problem, okay? So and nil system is a close relative of a compact abelian group rotation, let's say, of a rotation on a circle, but the setup is more general. So you have a k-step nilpotent group, a homogeneous space of a k-step nilpotent group. You have to factor it out to make it compact in order to have any chance to have a finite translation invariant measure. And then you consider translations on this space. Okay, so this is very, this is a concrete algebraic setup. Okay, so very special class of systems that you would like to check your result. Okay, so as I told you, I mean, this reduction works when the sequence is polynomial. In our case, our sequence is not polynomial. It's, I don't know, integer part into the square root of 2. So the first thing you have to do is, first of all, carry out this reduction step in our setup. Okay, but the fact that your sequence contains very long polynomial patterns somehow enables you. You use the previous result. It's, I don't know, 5 pages of estimate, and you do the reduction. This is not really the hard part. Okay, so even in our setup, when we deal with patterns of this form, we can show that suffices to check the multiple recurrence property for nil systems. Okay, so we're left with this problem. But for nil systems, okay? And this was actually pretty much not our starting point, but the harder part was actually after that point. It's not really easy to deal with these guys. At least we didn't know how to do this a year ago. And the idea is very natural how you deal with this. You take the average over mn of these expressions, and you like to compare them with the average of the expressions, this one, MA, TNA, T to the 2NA, that we have complete control. The second average, we know it's positive. This is Furstenberg's multiple recurrence result. So if we're able to show that the first average is equal to the second, then we're done. This is not true in general, but for irrational nil systems, it holds. And there is a trick that if you have it for irrational, you pass it to any. Okay, so the problem reduces if you have an irrational, what we call nil rotation, show that these two averages are equal. Equivalently, it's very easy to reformulate actually your problem to the following statement. This is just a uniform distribution result on a nil manifold. So you have a nil manifold and irrational nil rotation, whatever that means, it's a generalization of an irrational rotation. And you have this sequence that depends on M, N, N, and you like to show that this sequence is equidistributed on the whole space. Okay? So this is the key thing. Actually, that was the point that we were stuck for several months, close to a year. This was a thing that we could not do. The problem with this guy is the following. So if you consider it as an infinite sequence, then you have to look at these CM guys. You have no control over the CMs. The argument does not give you anything about the CMs, and whatever actually it gives you, it's not useful. So you cannot really say that this is a polynomial sequence. We're very good with dealing with polynomial sequence, but this is not. So if you like to see a polynomial sequence out of this guy, you have to fix M, and then you have a finite block. Then CM is fixed, then this is a linear sequence for fixed M, but this is, of course, a finite sequence. Okay, finite sequence cannot be equidistributed, but the point is that maybe you hope that it's going to be epsilon distributed, so for large enough M, at least. And this is something that it's true. So what you could show is that for almost every M, this sequence, this finite segments that you have, are epsilon distributed on your space. But of course, in order to prove something like that, you really need some quantitative equidistribution result on nil manifolds, which was not available. Actually, we were trying to prove this thing using qualitative equidistribution results. We could do it for two-step nil systems, not three-step, or for, I don't know, quadratic sequence, not third-degree sequence. So actually, life was, the situation was rather disappointing at some point, and the proofs were becoming larger and larger. And quite likely, in a few months ago, Grint actually proved a quantitative equidistribution result for nil manifolds for a completely different problem, in finding asymptotics for arithmetic progressions in the primes that actually exactly matches what we wanted to have. So using the result, which is 70 pages or something, so then it takes a couple of pages to prove what we want to prove. So that was rather fortunate. So life was good again. So that was very, very good. Yeah, so this is so the principle in general now. So if you like to if you have a sequence and you like to prove that it's good for, let's say, for Semmeridis theorem, or if you have K sequence, if you want, one way, one thing you could try is try to find a lot of polynomial progressions in the range, and you should have some control on some coefficient, leading or I don't care, any coefficient, not the constant term. And then you could use quantitative equidistribution results to. So first of all, you should be able to do the reduction step to nil system, and then you could use a quantitative equidistribution results. So this pretty much reduces a hard problem. I mean, this thing of finding a polynomial configuration from the range of a sequence is really not a problem in ergodic theory. It's just something that depends on the sequence you have. If you could do it, you are in pretty good shape. If you cannot, then you have to try something else. So what I would like to talk about in the remaining minutes is just a plausible statement, conjecture, about how you could decide about the general sequence, if it's good for Semmeridis theorem or not, okay? Not necessary sufficient conditions. There is really no hope for that. Just usable necessary conditions, okay? And actually, our motivation, our guide is the following, all the result of Kamen, Mendes, and France. So this deals only with two-step progressions. Okay, but already this is interesting. So whether you can find x and y, so that x minus y is equal to a n. Okay, so the following thing, if it's satisfied, it tells you that you're in good shape for two-term progression. So if you have a sequence so that for every irrational number, the fractional part of a n a is equidistributed in, not in t in 0, 1. This is the first thing. So for example, the square satisfies this. Okay. And second, you have good divisibility properties. This is the first abstraction that I mentioned. So the range of your sequence contains a lot of multiples of r for every r. The square certainly also satisfies it. Then you're going to be good for two-term progressions. Okay? The proof of this actually is not hard at all, especially if you take the ergodic way. It's just an easy application of the spectral theorem for unitary operators, so less than a page. So this criterion is, for example, applicable for any polynomial with zero constant term. The shifted primes, this is certainly not a Hardy sequence, okay, but it does satisfy this criterion. And to the square root of 2, actually all the Hardy sequences I mentioned do satisfy this condition. So for two-term progressions, you could just check it using this result. But for longer-term progressions, life is much tougher. And actually, even to state what would be the generalization of this is not easy at all to make a good guess, unless you have some experience. So, but we do have a lot of experience with this problem. So we really know that what you should do. So the second condition is fine, the divisibility property. So what you should do is you should put something stronger in one. And of course, now we know that these problems are really closely related to uniform distribution results on nil manifolds. So it's easy for us to make a plausible conjecture that instead of having irrational rotation on the circle, you have an irrational nil rotation on a k-step nil manifold. So this is a statement that really looks plausible. So suppose that you have a sequence that, so that for every irrational nil rotation, you have a good equidistribution, and you have good divisibility properties, then this sequence should be good for Semmeretti's theory. Okay, of course, proving this is a different story. It doesn't look easy at all. The spectral theorem that we have in the case for two-term progressions is absent right now for general term progressions, so we really don't see how we could prove this now. But at least we can verify this just to lend support to this conjecture when the range of your sequence has positive density. Of course, this is not really the interesting case, but this tells you that this should probably hold. Okay. Yeah, this appears in a recent preprint with Lezin and Virgil. And just a couple of problems that we're not able to do. So n to the square root is 2, very naturally you would ask p to the square root of 2 if it's good. Of course it's good. How you prove it? We really have no good ideas for this problem. You try to exhibit, let's say, arithmetic progressions in the range, possibly is true, but doesn't look very easy. And a second problem is actually a strengthening of our main result. So I said that the function should be grow faster than x to the d, slower than x to the d plus 1. This is really not necessary. Most likely, if you have a function that stays away from polynomials in this weaker sense, it is going to be good for Semmeretti's theorem. But I have to take here polynomials with real coefficients. There are counterexamples with irrational coefficients. Okay, so if you give me a polynomial, the truth is I know how to handle it. There are methods. It is possible to decide whether it's good or bad. Okay, so forget about this case. If you are not a polynomial, you should be good. Okay. And of course, the third problem. This is now natural and fashionable nowadays, since the Semmeretti's theorem gives you something about the primes. The polynomial Semmeretti, Tau, and Ziegler gave you something about the primes, again, polynomial configuration. Of course, you would expect that since you have a result like that, it should also give you something about the primes. This is none of my business, actually. Okay, so I will end with that.